Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison with the Sports Machine, Sean Levine, Rob Brinton producing this thing. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. We got a very busy show planned for you today. You can always interact with the show at 913-576-7610. Again, you're listening to The Drive right here on 610 Sports Radio. Carrington Harrison here, Sports Machine, Sean Levine, and Rob Brinton. How you guys doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I went to Ross earlier today. I needed some new boxers, and all they sell is boxer briefs. Is that what we're doing these days, guys? Like, we don't go with normal old boxers, but I guess I'll have to give the old boxer briefs a try.
So yesterday we had the mayor of Kansas City, Mayor Quentin Lucas, join us on the show. This is the first time I can remember since the idea of the Sprint Center was first pitched to us as Kansas Cityans that there is real momentum towards the NBA in Kansas City. And no, not for an anchor tenant. This is not thinking that Kansas City is going to steal the Toronto Raptors, but there's real buzz about this. Here's the mayor of Kansas City, Mayor Quentin Lucas, when he joined us yesterday.
So a few different conversations, all of which started really just this weekend for Kansas City. One, you have to make sure you're reaching out to the NBA and Toronto Raptors ownership. We are doing that, taking steps to do that here in Kansas City, making sure that they know about the opportunity. The second step is making sure that we're ready here in Kansas City. So I've had the chance to talk to leadership from not just the Sports Commission, but also from the T-Mobile Center here in Kansas City, which, surprising to some, has actually undergone several million dollars in upgrades since T-Mobile took over Sprint, and thus the T-Mobile Center sponsorship came into place. And then the other part is connecting with other leaders in this area. Almost our entire congressional delegation, with the exception of one of our senators who doesn't particularly like the NBA, have been talking with us and working with us to try to make sure we're reaching out to the NBA with, a full court press. So, look, it is still, it's still a difficult issue to get. Certainly something we can't guarantee. Part of it depends on what Prime Minister Trudeau and others do in terms of allowing Americans into Canada and some sort of exemption, which I think would be the NBA's preference. But we're making sure they know that if they need to be in the United States, there's no better place to be than Kansas City, and that we certainly beat Buffalo.
So that was the mayor of Kansas City, Mayor Quentin Lucas, when he joined us yesterday. Sean, maybe it is just a simple fact that the Chiefs are playing the Jets this week and we all expect an absolute beatdown and we're looking for something else to simply pass the time. But this one just feels more real. You have the mayor of Kansas City commenting on it. You have maybe the most popular mayor in the history of the city, Emmanuel Cleaver, a part of the initiative. Andy Reid commented on it today. We'll play that for you. Patrick Mahomes commented on it today. This feels as real as it felt when we first floated the idea that maybe the Sprint Center could be the home for the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, we never really talked about maybe a team will come here for a year, though. Now, COVID has kind of set the entire world on its side, so I'm not complaining if the Raptors do come here, and at least it gives you a chance, right? That's all you can ask for in this life is an opportunity. And then go out there and show what you can do. That's how Oklahoma City got their NBA team. And in a funny way, C-Dot, I think it's Oklahoma City's success and their fandom that's probably going to screw Kansas City, at least for probably the next 5-10 years, because geographically, I feel like, how long is it to drive there? 3.5, 4 hours? We've both been down there and seen a couple of games. I don't know if Kansas City and Oklahoma City could both be successful markets if the teams aren't both great. Now, if Kansas City had an NBA team, and it's like they had down with the Thunder, where they suck for the first year, this is how it happened. They suck for a year, and I don't remember the chronological order, but 3 years in a row, they drafted Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden, three MVPs in the league. If you do that, it doesn't matter if you're in Oklahoma City, if you're in Bermuda, if you're in – it doesn't matter where you're playing. People are going to come watch. If that happened in Kansas City, then I think it would work. If it didn't, and if it took a while and they had to build it, that's the problem. Like, for just a short period of time, I actually think that let's say fans can come back, and the Raptors actually came to Kansas City and played whatever, 35-41 the entire season here, I'm pretty sure they'd sell it every single game. I think that there's enough fandom for basketball, enough people, and enough general interest in the NBA, the novelty, that at least for a year it would work. The question is, what happens when the Raptors leave if Kansas City was to ever actually get a team and they weren't the Raptors, a good team right away? Would people be interested? Because I think this is more of a short-term thing than a long-term thing, but either way, I'm down with it.
Yeah, I mean, the conversation for an anchor tenant to me for the Sprint Center was done a long time ago. Whether it was the NBA or the NHL, to me, we were all wasting our time if we were still talking about that in the last 3 or 4 years. So that's not what this conversation is. Again, I don't think that the Kansas City market is going to steal a basketball team from Toronto, the fourth largest city in North America and the only NBA team north of the border. So that's not what it is. But as you alluded to, when it comes to an opportunity, we know how Kansas City does with television ratings. The ratings would be through the roof for the 1 year of a good NBA team with a chance to win the Eastern Conference. The television ratings would be good. So when the next time of relocation happens in the NBA, are you in the mix? Because I've always looked at it like Seattle was way ahead of where Kansas City was. Las Vegas, I think, is way ahead of where Kansas City is, that now it's not as taboo to be a pro sports team in Vegas. I think you instantly, if you get this opportunity, there's not going to be an NBA franchise in Buffalo. There's not going to be an NBA franchise in Louisville. There could potentially be one in Kansas City with a really good showing. And to me, seeing the excitement that I think has existed the last 3 or 4 days, the fact that you have so many prominent people in Kansas City seem to all pulling in one direction, is the most encouraging thing we've seen in 15 years.
I actually think Kansas City, Carrington's the last of the Mohicans with what you're asking. Like, could it work? Is it viable? You talked about Seattle. It's just a matter of time. Seattle's getting an NBA franchise, the Kraken, I believe starting next year. So they already got the arena and everything. They will have an NBA franchise within, I would say, 5 or 6 years. I'd be shocked if they don't. I don't even know why the Sonics ever left. Las Vegas, as you said, it used to be taboo. It's not anymore. Now they've got, obviously, the NHL there, the NFL there. They got the WNBA there. So that, I would say, within my guess would be a half a dozen years, 5 or 6 years. Vegas has an NBA team also. And then Kansas City is kind of the last one that's kind of hanging out there, where people are saying, all right, should they get one, should they not? They have the two most important things, in my opinion, if you're talking about either short-term getting the Raptors or long-term getting any team back, which is, one, they have the arena. Like, a lot of these teams would have to actually go out there and build the arena. We've got the arena. It's an NBA arena. The plan was, when they built it 10 years ago, or 11 years ago now at this point, that they would get a full-time tenant. That hasn't been the case. And, you know, if they decide to bring an NBA team here, it's minimal construction for what we're talking about, plus the interest. Like, I do think it's a little confusing, because we always talk about that Kansas City doesn't care about the NBA. Well, I think Kansas City doesn't necessarily care about the NBA the way we think, because they don't have a team, because everybody's kind of spread out. But I don't think that they don't care about the NBA. It's just, we got Bulls fans, Pacers fans, Knicks fans. We got guys that just care about certain players. But if there was a team here, I feel like, and speaking for myself, I'm a Bulls fan, I would definitely be willing to give up my allegiances in a heartbeat if Kansas City got an NBA team. And I think the entire city would do it. So it's kind of like when soccer came to town. Like, yeah, it took a couple of years to get going, but when it got cooking, all of a sudden, one of the best teams in the league, sell out every game, one of the best stadiums. I honestly believe that the NBA would be a lot like that.
So I'm in favor of the NBA. Sean is in favor of it. Rob is as well. So is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Kansas City is a great spot for any franchise to be at. I mean, if you look at the support that the Royals have, the Chiefs, Sporting KC, and everyone else that plays out here. I mean, the fan base is crazy, and they love sports, and they love to be here. And if you look just down the road at Lawrence, and you see the way the Jayhawks, how they pack out that place every single week, that you know that the T-Mobile Center or whatever would be a great spot for any basketball franchise to be at.
I just like that Patrick Mahomes has no clue what the Sprint Center or T-Mobile Center is. Just like the T-Mobile Center or whatever. I'm happy that he's in the same place as the rest of us that live here. That was the quarterback. Here's the head coach.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a phenomenal sports town, I guess. Herbie is what I'd tell him. And not that Toronto's not. I'm not saying that. There are good people up in Toronto, too. So, but I believe we'd love to have you, and let's go. Let's roll. No better sports place than right here.
That was the coach and the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, talking about what has turned into the biggest story this week in Kansas City, that the Toronto Raptors could be potentially looking for a place to relocate for one season in the midst of COVID, and Kansas City is a realistic possibility. Coming up next, we'll talk about the Kansas City Chiefs and the New York Jets and what is the biggest difference between those two teams. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. You can always interact with the show, 913-576-7610. You can always use that to either call or text the show. Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, we'll get a brand spanking new Levine's List. But this week's game against the New York Jets understandably doesn't have any juice. You are the best team in the NFL. They are the worst team in the NFL. You have Super Bowl aspirations. They have Trevor Lawrence aspirations. The two teams on the field could not be any different. But I think from a front office standpoint and from an organizational standpoint, they also couldn't be much different. The Chiefs and the Jets did the exact same thing. In 2017, the Chiefs identified who their quarterback was, went up in the draft to grab their quarterback. The Jets in 2018 with a top five pick did the exact same thing that the Kansas City Chiefs did. But the Chiefs, at the moment that they drafted Patrick Mahomes, have always made the decision that we are going to put as many resources around him as possible. We're going to go grab Mitchell Schwartz. We're going to grab Sammy Watkins, even though we have Tyreek Hill. We're going to draft a running back in the first round. Hey, we think that Tyreek Hill could be out for four games because he could be suspended. We're going to draft Mecole Hardman in the second round. Like, the Chiefs have always sided with, when in doubt, let's give Patrick Mahomes as much support as possible because he is the lifeblood of our organization. Man, the Jets have done the exact same or the exact opposite thing. So the Jets drafted Sam Darnold, number three overall in 2018. They only drafted one more offensive player in that draft. It was in the fourth round. It was a tight end who has 56 or 53 catches for 600 yards in three seasons. He hasn't been very productive. In 2019, so after you see Sam Darnold, you see he needs some help, they spend their first two picks on defense, and one of those players they're talking about trading. The next year, they then continue to not give him any weapons and any real support. These two organizations are obviously very different, but the biggest difference is the Chiefs drafted a quarterback in the first round and have put him in a situation in which he can absolutely flourish. The Jets drafted a quarterback in the first round and have put their quarterback in a nonstop position to fail.
Well, that and Sam Darnold is about as good at football as Kevin Arnold. Like, it just hasn't worked out from day one. And it's not like the Chiefs only started adding weapons since Pat got here. They were like, oh man, this guy's really good. We better surround him with a bunch of weapons. Nah, they already had Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. They already had a left tackle that's a number one overall pick in the draft and Eric Fisher. So they already had a quarterback in place that was a veteran, that was a good dude, that was willing to not give up his position, but certainly it wasn't an Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre type situation where it's contentious. So there was definitely a lot there, and they keep adding to it. And that's what you have to do, because it'd be easy enough for Brett Veach Carrington to say, well, now we've got Pat and all these guys in place, let's go just look on the defensive side or add to our special teams. And they've done that also. That's been the genius of Brett Veach, is he's never really rested. Like, it feels like when you can say, all right, my work here is done, then we go, oh, and he signed Travis Kelce to an extension. Oh, and he figured out with Chris Jones, and he got all these one-year contracts done. Like, that's the thing, is it wasn't just Pat. It was Pat, and then it was this guy and that guy and this guy, where at least I would say, we always talk about how wide open the window is, Most of these guys are under contract, so this is the 2020 season until about the 2022-2023 season, and then we'll start talking about maybe some new skill position players, Tyrann Mathieu, Chris Jones. But for the next several years, man, we're going to be having a lot of the same conversations we're having right now.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying about Sam Darnold, but let's also be fair here. The Jets haven't given him any support, and I think we've seen here in Kansas City with just Le'Veon Bell. He was running for 3 yards a carry. People thought he was done. He had one carry over 15 yards and 264 carries. His first carry with the Kansas City Chiefs, he did well. Adam Gase was also the head coach for Ryan Tannehill, who I don't know a whole lot of people that sung the praises of Ryan Tannehill when he was the quarterback of the Miami Dolphins. He then got away from Adam Gase. He went to Mike Vrabel. He then went to Tennessee, and Tannehill's playing like a top 10 quarterback in the league. So I'm not here saying that Sam Darnold could be the answer. I don't think he was ever put in a situation where we could even find out. Like, I don't know how you have success with the way that the Jets are currently put together. I don't know how you're a good offensive team. They have a bad offensive line. They have no running game. They don't have really good wide receivers. They never gave him a tight end. Like, what are you expecting your quarterback to go out there and do?
Yeah, this is the Jets, though. Like, I'm not surprised. If this was the Giants have typically been a pretty good organization, at least the last 10 or 15 years. I ask you this in all seriousness. When's the last time that the Jets had a good quarterback situation? Chad Pennington? And I don't even know if that was that good. I mean, you can't say Mark Sanchez. I know he went to back-to-back AFC championship games, but that was smoke and mirrors and luck. This is what the Jets, there are certain organizations, for whatever reason, the Jets, the Broncos, the Browns, that just cannot figure it out at the quarterback situation. And you might have said that about the Chiefs for a long time. Now, the Chiefs were better than those teams. They just didn't ever be able to find – that's not good English. They weren't ever able to find the guy they were looking for until they finally got the guy in Patrick Mahomes. So it just feels like the Jets have kind of been in this purgatory for years, and now they're at their worst. Like, I genuinely believe that there's a chance – that the Jets don't win a football game this year. Like, there's bad football teams, and then there's bad football teams that want to be bad. That's why the Jets are keeping Adam Gase. Let's just call it what it is. Like, if the Jets wanted to be better, we all know what they would do. They would get a new head coach, but they don't want to be better. They want to be as bad as possible. In fact, they want to be the worst, because the way that it goes, it's not an NBA lottery. It's the NFL draft. Worst team, first pick, and then you get Trevor Lawrence, and in theory, you're good for 10 or 12 years. So it's no secret what the Jets are doing. They're trying to suck.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll talk about the Chiefs, who are dealing with two major injuries and when those guys could potentially come back. But let's talk about this Chiefs being a complete roster, the absolute opposite of what the Jets are.
Yeah, I think that if you look at the Chiefs roster up and down, and it's not just the top of the roster, where obviously they're probably the most talented, it's even at the bottom of the roster, it's anybody that gets on the field. It's the coaching staff. Most of the time, CDOT on Fridays will check the boxes. No need for it. Like, we're not checking the boxes this Friday. Why would we waste our time? The quarterback, you could literally be talking about the best versus the worst. The running game, now that they don't have Le'Veon Bell and you do, the Chiefs have a real two-headed monster back there, while the Jets have, I don't know, somebody running the football. The weapons, the line, the defense. Again, the Jets are in a weird spot right now, because most of the time it's not like that clear when teams are trying to be bad, because they end up 3-13. They dump water on the coach when they win a couple of games. The Chiefs with Romeo Crennel, for example, like, that was a bad football team, but not because they were trying to be bad. The Jets outwardly are trying to be a bad football team, which is why I don't know if the line is big enough. It's kind of been shaken around. Like, it started at almost 3 touchdowns. Last I saw it, it was around 18 and a half or 19 points. This is one of those games where it feels like if the Jets score 17, then the Chiefs did a bad job. And if the Chiefs don't score 42 or 50, then they did a bad job on that side of the ball. So this just feels like one of those, the Chiefs want it, the Jets don't, the Chiefs are a better team, and hopefully by the fourth quarter, you don't see Patrick Mahomes in this game.
I'm with you. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, who are dealing with two major injuries and when they could potentially be back on the field. That's coming up next. Stick around. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll be joined by the Plaid Prince, the editor-in-chief of Arrowhead Pride. Pete Sweeney will be on the show coming up in about 30 minutes. So earlier today, the Chiefs gave us a little bit of an update on some of the major injuries that they have. Both Mitchell Schwartz and Sammy Watkins are progressing, but they still won't practice today. Sean, I'm looking at the Chiefs' schedule here, and I see absolutely no reason why either of these gentlemen should be back before the bye week. They play the Jets. They play the Carolina Panthers. They then have a bye week on November 15th, and they don't play a quote-unquote real opponent until at Las Vegas on Sunday Night Football at the end of the month. We shouldn't even be having these Sammy Watkins conversations. Like, I know you and I joke about what Sammy Watkins does week 6, 7, and 8 of the NFL season. He can really go to Cancun for these next couple of weeks. Hey, go spend some time with your family. It's not one of those peak seasons. You come back for the bye week, get all your treatment. Let's get ready to play, and let's get ready for a stretch where we play on the road in Vegas and then on the road at Tampa Bay. But we shouldn't be having a conversation these next couple of weeks of when is Mitchell Schwartz going to come back? When are Sammy Watkins going to come back? They should be taking their time and coming back after the bye week.
Oh, no. I would ask the same question that a lot of people ask about their in-laws. Why do you want to come back so soon in the case of Sammy Watkins? Like, that vacation you're talking about, can he really just take it until the playoffs? Like, honestly, is he going to affect the outcome? Have you seen a difference in the Chiefs with or without Sammy Watkins? What's the one thing we always talk about? But in the playoffs, but in the Super Bowl, well, that's still a ways away, so let old boy take his vacation, tell him he can extend it for a while, give Byron Pringle a shot, maybe Mecole Hardman would like to come to the party, DeMarcus Robinson hasn't done much, and they keep winning games. So I don't want to see Sammy get hurt in those games that you're talking about, not big enough, like the Tampa Bay game or whatever. Nah, like, stay, get your cabana rented for the next couple of months, and then once the playoffs roll around, just get out your schedule, look whenever that is. Hopefully the Chiefs get that bye, so that'll give you another week off. And then come back and get yourself in football shape and then get ready for the playoffs. Now, Mitchell Schwartz is a little bit more of a let's try to get him back. We do know now that the Chiefs have depth at the offensive line, but let's not pretend like Mitchell Schwartz isn't the best at what he does. Even though he hasn't been as great, as perfect this year as he's been in the past, he's still pretty damn good. He's the best at what they have. So with Sammy Watkins, though, man, like I said, I would extend that cabana rental for maybe a couple of more months and just come back for the playoffs. I'm fine with that.
I actually do think we've seen an effect of them not having Sammy Watkins here over the last couple of weeks. I think if you look at the numbers from Tyreek Hill, I think it's pretty clear here. Like, Tyreek Hill was more effective earlier in the season when Sammy Watkins was on the other side, and now teams are defending Tyreek Hill very differently than they were at the early part of the season. So I do look at Sammy Watkins as being a need. Now, can this team win 12, 13 games without Sammy Watkins? Absolutely. So you and I are inevitably talking about the same thing, about having him back for the playoffs. But I would say one thing that I would like to see the offense maybe improve upon, and a lot of it is the way that teams are defending it, is we haven't really seen too many of those big Tyreek Hill plays that we see. Teams are only sending 3, only sending 4, dropping 7, and dropping 8, and they're really making it a point to sort of take away those big plays down the field for Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman and some of their playmakers that I just think the defense was just a little looser. Things were a little bit more opened up when Sammy Watkins, because he's just a better route runner than DeMarcus Robinson and Mecole Hardman. So I would say that we have seen some evidence that Sammy Watkins improves this offense just based on how Tyreek Hill and the numbers over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
I mean, maybe at a very minuscule level, but not enough that it matters. They've won the games relatively comfortably. They put up 43 points, and the offense didn't do much of anything. If Sammy was there, what was really going to happen? Were they going to put up a 50 spot? Were they going to put up a Curtis Jackson? Who really cares? Back to Tyreek Hill, though, for a second. He's having a weird year. Like, he really is, because if you look at his numbers, you're right. They don't blow you away. He doesn't have a bunch of those long catches, because that's what Tyreek Hill is. He's not necessarily a guy that's ever going to have a Michael Thomas 145 reception type year. He's the type of guy that's going to get 75, 85 catches, but break off 1,100, 1,300 yards because a bunch of them are the long plays. Maybe it's the defenses focusing, double teaming him, shading kind of that extra safety to his side. We've seen a lot of that. But he's got in the end zone. That's why I said it was weird. Like, he's scored a lot. Same thing with Travis Kelce. Both those guys are on pace to have career years when it comes to scoring touchdowns. And ultimately, the last time I checked, That's one of the more important things in football.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things with Tyreek Hill. To me, you got to look a little bit deeper than the box score. That if you haven't been watching the games, I think people would look at it and think that Tyreek Hill is having a down year when it comes to catches and yards. But I just think it is 100% how teams are defending him. I think that Terrez Paylor made the best point when it comes to it. Teams are making a choice. We can either die slow or die quick, and we're going to make it a point to keep the Chiefs under 35 and under 30 because that's where we think we have the best chance to win. If this game turns into a track meet with Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and Mecole Hardman, that's simply not a game that we can win. But if we can keep them under 30, which has happened multiple times this season, we give ourselves a chance to win. Man, the best way to do that is to eliminate the big plays and sort of those runs that we see the Kansas City Chiefs go on. They haven't had too many of those spurts where it's just a three possessions, three touchdowns, let's just go ahead and put the game out of reach. They haven't had too much of those outside of the Baltimore game. So my level of concern for Tyreek Hill is a zero. To me, it is 100% what defenses are doing to him, not really any regression from him.
Well, then that should be scary as hell for other NFL teams and teams that are coming up on the schedule and teams in the division. Because if we agree that the Chiefs haven't got the long play yet and they haven't really played their best football, and this is not the best that we've seen of Patrick Mahomes, and we think that Edwards-Helaire probably has another gear to take it into, and the offensive line has been makeshift, and Frank Clark hasn't dominated. Man, you'd think that the team was 500. No. They're in the driver's seat. Well, not in the driver's seat. I guess Pittsburgh is, but let's see what happens in the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game coming up this weekend. I mean, they're right where we thought they were going to be. If they blow out the Jets, we're halfway through the season. They're 7-1. They've lost a game by 8 points. These are all good things. Like, I'm glad that we're not saying, hey, Tyreek Hill's the best wide receiver in the league right now. Hey, Travis Kelce just had another 150-yard game. Let's save those. The team is really good where they can beat you in a lot of ways right now, where, again, I think they're going to end up the one seed, and as long as they're playing their best football, kind of like they did last year, and last year, CDOT, it was a little bit different because I would say the reason that they didn't play their best football instead of toward the end of the season was because of injuries, and that hasn't been the case, knock on wood, nearly as much this season. But I think that most people would agree we haven't seen the best version of the 2020 Kansas City Chiefs. I think the defense has been about what I thought they were going to be, but I think they can probably even be just a little bit better. And then offensively, nobody, including Patrick, when we bring him on Mondays, would say that they've been playing their best football, that they don't have another gear they can take it into. So when they do, man, I mean, they've lost one game. What happens when they take it to the level that they're capable of doing? Watch out.
We actually asked Rich Gannon this question. Here's where he says the Chiefs can improve and hit that next level, that next gear that you were talking about.
Continuity along the front would help. I mean, there was some communication breakdowns. I mean, you know, you look at the sacks a couple times, you had guys running clean without a body assigned to them. Again, there's certain times where you're going to be one short in a protection scheme. But I know one time I watched Mahomes throw the ball hot to Edwards-Helaire. He didn't have his head around. He wasn't even looking for it. He wasn't even anticipating it. So there's some things as you study it week in and week out that, you know, you can tell they're not playing as well as they have in the past. I think a lot of it has to do with the protections, and that's not all on the offensive line. Some of it has to do with the backs involved in the protection scheme. Some of it has to do with Patrick Mahomes, just in terms of communicating, redirecting the line, audibling, getting out of a bad play into a better one. So I think there's plenty of blame to go around, but they've got some things to clean up. And I think it starts with playing a little bit better up front.
Sean, you bring up the Chiefs hitting that next gear, hitting that next level, and playing better football. To me, it starts up front. Like, this offense was dominant against Buffalo when their offensive line, we gave them an A-plus grade. Their offensive line really struggled against the Broncos. Like, I look at their third down conversion rate where they were 0-for-8. That's an offensive line thing. Bradley Chubb went unblocked for a majority of the day. They tried two tight end sets. That didn't really help. Like, this team can't really hit that next level unless they shore up the offensive line, and they can't really shore up this offensive line until Mitchell Schwartz comes back.
Oh, protection is very important. I mean, Mr. Renzi taught me that Blue Valley Northwest health class in like 2000. No doubt, protection is important. I think that was right before the old STD slides came out, which those weren't any good, if you guys know what I'm talking about. But anyway, yeah, back to football. The Chiefs offensive line is not a problem. Like, let's not make something into it, Carrington. Do you think it's a problem? I think it was a problem one game versus the Raiders, and then we went, uh-oh, they lost that game, so let's put our microscope on it and see exactly what happened. The offensive line was bad, but sometimes over a couple of years, guess what? A line's going to have a bad day, and they did, and then they came back with a bunch of no-name dudes we didn't hear of and absolutely dominated against Buffalo. So I don't know about you, but I'm not my level of concern for the offensive line is 0.0.
I mean, I don't think their offensive line was very good against the Broncos. I mean, I think that's the biggest reason why their offense struggled. Like, I know that it says they scored 42 points. They scored 14 points of those not on offense. They did not convert a third down. That's not an elite-level offense from the Kansas City Chiefs. I put that majority on the offensive line. Like, Mahomes was fine. The run game was fine. They had major protection issues there again. Like, Mahomes got hit more times in that game than he got hit in any other game so far this season. Now, if we're talking long term, again, I don't know if we can really evaluate this offensive line until you get Mitchell Schwartz back. But if you're asking me right now, what's the biggest flaw with the Chiefs, with the current Chiefs that we're going to see right now, I would say it's their offensive line.
Oh, yeah, no, I disagree with that completely. I think that it's the linebacker core. I think that it's the young cornerbacks that have maybe gotten a little bit exposed at the beginning of this season. The Chiefs definitely have bigger issues in the offensive line. It's because now they have depth. And I'm not saying that all those guys that we saw against Buffalo are going to always play like that. The reason I'm not calling them by their name, I don't know what the hell their names are. The only one I can remember is Allegretti. O'Kilgore was the other guy. Like, these dudes don't have any experience. Nobody knows their names. But when you watch them, when you see an offensive line, and you're a football fan, you watch football your whole life like you and I, we're not experts on the offensive line. You know how we know when they're good? When they're blocking and creating big holes and the quarterback has time and they're pancaking people. You know how we know when they're bad? When the guy they're blocking gets around him, sheds the block, and gets to the quarterback, and the running game doesn't do well. So I saw enough in that game to know that the Chiefs have depth at the offensive line right now, where at the beginning of the season that was a problem because you didn't have Dr. Duvernay-Tardif. He opted out. We know that Eric Fisher is bound to miss a game or two as the season goes along. Now Mitchell Schwartz has been out, so it was like, uh-oh, you're missing 40% of your line. KO, Kelechi Asemele went down. I mean, it's a makeshift offensive line, but to me, that doesn't automatically mean that it's a problem.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll be joined by Pete Sweeney of Arrowhead Pride. Pete Sweeney will be on the show coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll also get to a brand spanking new Levine's List. But I have a special edition of One Gotta Go. Today, we're going to play City's Edition. The Kansas City Chiefs are playing the New York Jets. New York is the biggest city, or at least the most populous city, in the United States. I got an East Coast edition for you of One Gotta Go. Boston, Philadelphia, New York, or Washington, D.C., Sean. One Gotta Go.
From Boston. Well, to be fair, I've been to all these places except for Boston. I've been in New York a bunch of times, got family that lives out there, so I've been to everywhere out there. I've been to Lower Manhattan. I've been to Brooklyn. I've been to Queens. I love New York City. Like, New York City is, especially, I'm a big Christmas guy. My Christmas tree's not up right now. I'm not that ridiculous, but I do put my stuff up pretty early, and there's no place like New York during Christmas time, which is coming up, so that's not going anywhere. Again, Boston, I've never been there, so Philly was cool. Philly just, everybody talks about how all the Philly fans are angry. We know they booed Santa Claus and all those different things. I mean, that's true. Like, people in Philadelphia, I've never met people with less of an attention span than Philadelphia. Now, again, I've never been to Boston, but people in Philadelphia just seem a little bit angry. And then Washington, D.C. was cool. When I went to D.C., I was probably a little bit too young. Like, I was maybe 13, 14 years old, so they said, hey, here's this monument, here's this memorial, here's where Kennedy's buried. And I was kind of like, yeah, that'll be cool 10 years from now when I care about that stuff. I'd like to go back, but I think that D.C. is a great place. So New York's not going anywhere. D.C.'s not going anywhere. I've never been to Boston, but it seems like a great place, except for those roundabouts everybody talks about. I don't like roundabouts. I can't believe that we still have roundabouts on our roads in 2020. Philadelphia's got to go.
I'm going to keep New York. I went to New York in February, and I really liked it. Now, I'm one of the people that whenever I go to a city, I want to do all the touristy stuff. Like, I'm the person that goes to Los Angeles that the number one thing I want to do is see the Hollywood sign. I tried to do that in New York. It is impossible to do in 4 days when I was there. You would have to spend 2 weeks to go see all the cool stuff in New York. I was thinking that they were somewhat around each other. They are not somewhat around each other, but I loved my time in Manhattan. It was an amazing place. I will keep New York. I actually probably like D.C. the most out of these four cities. The history, the culture. I like D.C. I'm keeping D.C. I like the Philly people. I went to Philly. The food was amazing. This is another place on the East Coast where we think that the people are mean. I always enjoyed the people in Philadelphia the couple times that I've been there. I'm keeping the Philly people. Boston's out of here. I went to Boston one time. Didn't really have a great time. If your greatest thing that you give to the world is soup, I don't want no part of you. Boston, out of here for me. All right, we're going to the South, Sean. You have between Atlanta, Miami, Nashville, and Memphis. One gotta go.
You chose two cities from the same state? I've been to all these places for the record. Atlanta has the craziest highway system that I've ever seen in my entire life. It's just nuts. I mean, 6-lane highways on both sides. It's wild. Have you been to an Atlanta strip club, Carrington?
I have. I've been to Magic City and Strokers.
And Strokers.
It's called Strokers?
That's the name of it, Strokers, yeah. I just went because Jeezy said it. Okay. I was like, oh, Jeezy referenced this one time. It's got to be great.
You know Miami's not going anywhere, bro. I love it. The only time I was there was for the Super Bowl with you. That was awesome. So Miami's, like, if I could move anywhere, it'd probably be Miami. Miami's great. Nashville, Smashville's great. I feel like Nashville is like 80% girls, but maybe it's because it was one of those weekends I went out there for a bachelor party and that was what was on the mind back in the day. Nashville's not going anywhere. Memphis was aight. Memphis was cool. Like, I like Memphis. Memphis or Atlanta? I'll get rid of Memphis. I liked Atlanta. Besides the giant highways, like you said, I like the culture. I like the food. They got a good professional sports scene. I like Atlanta, so I'm getting rid of Memphis. You gotta go.
I actually like Atlanta the most out of these four cities. Really? Miami was cool, but Atlanta's like Black Overland Park. Like, I had never been to a place where it was so nice and a majority of the people were black. I loved Atlanta. It was an amazing time. And my favorite Atlanta joke is the best athletes work at the strip club, so I'm definitely keeping Atlanta. Miami was great, really expensive, not really my vibe, but I'd much rather live in Miami than live in Nashville, Tennessee. What are we talking about here? So I got to keep Nashville. I got to keep Miami. I had more fun in Memphis than when I went to Nashville. I did all the things you're supposed to do in Nashville, all the things that you're supposed to do in Memphis. Memphis was just more my style than these. It was just more my style. I'm keeping Memphis out of this one. Nashville, you out of here.
You should have put New Orleans on there. Like, New Orleans is the one that belonged, and then it would have been
Nashville still would have been out of here.
With New Orleans?
Yes, Nashville still would have been out of here for New Orleans. Okay. West Coast edition. Los Angeles, San Diego, Las Vegas, Phoenix. One gotta go.
What'd you say was like Black Overland Park, Atlanta?
Atlanta.
Well, I don't know what color, but Phoenix is a lot like it also. Like, it's very, very spread out. Everything. The problem with Kansas City is you can be in, like, I don't know, what's somewhere out south, Overland Park, Olathe, whatever. And then your boy's up north, he's in Liberty or whatever's north of there, and say, hey, I'm in Kansas City. Well, neither one of you guys are really in Kansas City, and as a matter of fact, you're like with traffic an hour away from each other. That's the problem with Phoenix, although Phoenix is still a great place. You know how I love Las Vegas. I love me some Vegas. It's not going anywhere. San Diego or Los Angeles? Well, I never been to either one of them, but I never heard a bad word about San Diego, and you don't like Los Angeles, so Los Angeles got to go.
I think I'm getting Vegas out of here.
Really?
I think I'm getting Vegas out of here for this reason.
I love Las Vegas.
Vegas doesn't seem like a place I would ever live. Like, Vegas is a place that's only cool for 48 hours.
Oh, no, I think about moving there every day.
72 at the absolute most. Like, after the third day of being in Vegas, I'm not going to lie to you, I'm kind of ready to go home. We've been walking this entire time. I'm just kind of ready to go. Now, Vegas is the first day is great in Vegas. The second day is really fun, too. By that third day, by, like, So you get there on Thursday night, Friday, Saturday. By Sunday, I'm kind of ready to go home here. So I got to get rid of Vegas out of this. I've never been to San Diego, but like you, I had never heard anybody say a bad thing about San Diego. Seems absolutely beautiful, like a place to live, and a lot more manageable to get around than Los Angeles. Last one here, States Edition, Iowa, 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 or Iowa. One got to go.
I guess I'll go with Iowa. Although, CDOT, back to Las Vegas, what you're talking about is a rookie mistake. Why would anybody go there? And I mean, why would anybody go there more than just 2 days? Like, you nailed it. You got to go. Here's the way to do Las Vegas, all right? You got to see if you can get an afternoon or even better, catch that Spirit flight that costs you like $48. If you can get in around like 8, 9 o'clock, go to your hotel, drop off your stuff, take a shower, grab a late dinner, and then just party your ass off all night long. Gamble, drink, look at stuff, do whatever you want. Don't blow too much money. And then, like you said, if you won a little bit of money the night before, when you wake up that next day, especially the first time in Las Vegas, it is glorious. The sun is up. You got a little bit of money in your pocket. Now it's the daytime, so it's a completely different experience. But I would say you got to fly in at nighttime so you can see like all the glitz and glamour of Las Vegas, all the neon lights. Then you got the next day. And then after that, you got to leave. Like, you can't have that extra day that you're talking about. That's a major mistake. Many, 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 many of people have. I've done it. I've done it multiple times. And that's hell. That is, you're in that hotel room. You don't want to go anywhere. You've already put 18 miles on your body. You've drank so much. You vomited. You can't even remember your name. And you just want to be back in your lazy boy or sleep in your bed. And all you hear is ding, 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 ding. Like, it doesn't even matter if you've won or lost at that point. So you're right what you said, but that's a pretty rookie mistake if you book that third day in Vegas.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll be joined by Pete Sweeney of Arrowhead Pride to get his thoughts on the Kansas City Chiefs. But before we do that, let's get to a brand spanking new Levine's List. Levine's
List. So I don't know if you heard, but maybe, just maybe, the Raptors are going to end up in Kansas City. These are the best TV shows slash movies, there we go, third time's a charm, that have dinosaurs in them. Which, by the way, is very loose because, you know, there wasn't a lot of dinosaur movies and TV shows. Here we go. At number 10, we talked about it yesterday. Dinosaurs on TGIF. I loved it. CDOT didn't like it. I checked it out. It actually lasted for 3 seasons, so it must have done good enough. At number 9, again, this is very loose here, Toy Story. And I love Toy Story. It's probably in my top 5 all-time favorite movies. It's just the dinosaur only appears a couple of times. CDOT, do you happen to remember the dinosaur's name in the movie?
T-Rex.
He's just called T-Rex? Mm-hmm. Mm. At number 8, the Flintstones. They got the dinosaur that they bathe with, which I always thought was kind of cool. They got the dinosaur that Fred slides down at the end of his shift. At number 6, Ice Age. I gotta admit, I've never seen the movie, but there has to be a dinosaur in the movie Ice Age, I would think. At number, where was I? 6. At number 6, Laugh If You Must. And I was in college when I saw this movie. And I'm not saying what I was doing or what we were on or anything like that, but at the time it was very entertaining. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of this. Raptor Ranch. Is this thing on? Am I talking to myself?
I've Raptor never seen Ranch. Ice Age before.
Help me out here. Raptor Ranch. Okay, here's my top 5. At number 5, Barney. Although Barney gets, you know, real annoying real quick if you're an adult. But much respect to the Barney, who I think that they're still making new episodes. By the way, that was supposed to be number 4. Number 3, Jurassic World. Jurassic World, not as good as number 1, Jurassic Park. And at number 2, I'm going out of order here, Land Before Time. Number 1, Jurassic Park. Number 2, Land Before Time. Number 3, Jurassic World. And then throw a bunch of other stuff in there. I didn't know if I could put Night at the Museum in there. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have seen that movie before. I really enjoy it.
It's a pretty good movie. I don't know if you would say that there's like enough dinosaur scenes in there to include it on this particular list. But then again, this whole list was, it was a stretch.
I mean, you had Ice Age and there wasn't a dinosaur in there. So you could have done it.
Are you sure?
I've seen Ice Age. I'm 11 years old, guys. The three main characters are a woolly mammoth.
In the movie Ice Age.
It's two woolly mammoths and a saber-toothed tiger. There is no dinosaur. Now, maybe in Ice Age 2, 3, or 4, not Ice Age 1, none.
Okay. All right. Well, either way, that is today's Levine's List, brought to you by 7th Street Casino. 7th Street Casino, where it's at.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Pete Sweeney, the Plaid Prince, the editor-in-chief of Arrowhead Pride, as we preview the Le'Veon Bell revenge game. Stick around. It's The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.